Welcome to the Andy Staples Show. It's a bet payoff edition. We're going to make you wait on this one. Normally, when either Ari Wasserman or I makes a bet that we regret, we pay it off immediately at the front of the Friday show. But this one, because of the special circumstances of the payoff, we're going to have to wait to the end because we might not have a podcast, Ari, if we let you do it first.
Yeah. Andy was like, hey, you want to do the podcast at 2 p.m.? And I was like, I actually have an appointment, ultrasound appointment with my fiance. And I was like, I don't know if that would knock me out of being able to go because I have literally no idea what to anticipate. Now, I was telling Andy this before the show, but I like spicy food. Like, I'd like the spicy chicken sandwich at Wendy's or spicy nuggets or spicy versions of
this
things.
This ain't that.
But I don't know that I've ever really wandered into the territory of extreme, you're sweating spice. And I know that, like, most people who are spicy food snobs would roll their eyes about spicy chicken sandwiches. And I know it's not that spicy. It has a minor kick. But I've never been a atomic wing person or, you know, somebody who's done heat challenges before. And I was reading, did you know what a metric of heat is called before this? Like a way of measuring a Scoville.
A Scoville unit. A Scoville unit.
Okay, I'd never heard of that before. So I looked
that
up. And
they're exponential. They're like decibels.
And maybe you can explain this to me because it really scared me. But I think eating a jalapeno, just taking a bite out of a jalapeno sounds terrible, right? Would you agree with that or do you think that's mild?
It's not mild, but it's not terrible.
So I think that a Scoville count on a jalapeno is like 4,000 and the Carolina Reaper pepper that is used to make this chip is like 2 million. So like that seems like a very drastic difference and it's scaring
me. So we need to set the scene here. So this is the Pocky One Chip Challenge. For those who don't know, this is a one tortilla chip. It comes in a box shaped like a coffin. It uses Carolina Reaper and scorpion pepper. Am I correct on that? Is that
That's correct.
The mix?
Yeah.
Okay. So Ari lost a bet last year. We bet on the Virginia Tech Miami game. I took Miami. He took Virginia Tech. Miami covered. And he was supposed to do it the following week. He got COVID the following week, so he couldn't do it. And then he was enjoying so much winning that bet where he bet on UCLA and I bet on LSU that some of the listeners, I'd actually forgotten about this, but I'm glad the listeners reminded me. I'm glad they did. I might have made a quick Amazon order when Ari was busy gloating about the UCLA win, and one appeared at his house last week. So Ari, I just Googled, by the way, the one chip challenge. You know what the first people also search for is?
What?
Has the one chip challenge killed anyone?
Killed anybody. Yeah, I am one of the people who did that. Yeah. Well, it made me feel a little bit better because you had to order it special online. Or like wherever you got it. But then I was in a gas station. Yeah, you got on Amazon. When I bought it last year, it never showed up actually, but I bought it from the Packy website. But now I saw there was a rack in a 7-Eleven I was in. So I was like, okay, if people are buying them like this, I mean, it can't be so dangerous that, you know, I mean, you know, they wouldn't just put it in a regular gas station. So I was legitimately nervous. I didn't want to do it. I don't want to do it. But now I've resigned myself of knowing it's probably just going to be an hour of misery and then it'll be over. I just was nervous about it carrying over into the evening or the following day, if you know what I mean. So, you know, it's going to stink tonight and it might stink tomorrow, you know, on the way out. So I'm excited to talk about football. So I don't have to worry about this for the next 35 minutes or so. And then you can be there with me and, you know, do my best to put this chip down. And I've got gloves. I've got scissors to open it so I don't have to touch the chip. I've got a half gallon of milk. I've got Tums. I'm not trying to be cool about it, dude. Like, I'm just trying to get through it. Like, there's people are like, yeah, yes, just set the timer and don't eat it for 10 minutes. No, I'm going to eat it. And whatever happens afterward to get through it, I'm going to do. I don't care. Like, there's no rules, right?
There are no rules. No. You're okay. Paying off a bet. The bet is eat the chip. All you have to do is eat the chip.
Okay.
Whatever happens next happens.
Okay.
But first, we have something to talk about because there was some very big news this week. USC fired Clay Helton. And, you know, I think Matt Fortuna and I were talking about this after the Stanford game. There was no path forward for Clay Helton. You know, I know there were one or two people who said, oh, you can't fire somebody week two. Yeah, you can. Like, when you know it's done, it's done. And that one was definitely done. But the biggest question now is, who are they going to get? And, you know, that question won't be answered for 2.5 months, but that gives us plenty of time to speculate on it.
Yeah, it's all. I feel like we've been speculating about it for 2 years. And it's. I think Clay Helton has to be a Guinness Book of World Records holder for longest hot seat. Like I'm doing the hot chip. He did the hot seat.
Correct.
Person who's on the hot seat for the longest. So, you know, I think that there are multiple ways to look at this. There's one main candidate that seems to continually come up, which we'll talk about. But then I saw a tweet and somebody said, I can't wait to speculate all the hot shot names that USC is going to get and then have them go pick somebody completely off the radar because it's going to be hilarious. And it's like, that might happen too. So the question I guess I'll ask you, and we had Antonio Morales on Stars Matter show, which you can get as bonus content through the Andy Staples feed. And I asked him this, and I'll ask you this. If you're USC, do you go and get a coach who will develop talent and has an offensive and defensive strategy that has worked once they have that talent? Or do you go get a big personality who can make the biggest splash and recruit the best? Like, do you want the Lane Kiffin type or do you want the Matt Campbell type?
See, but there's a happy medium. And like older Lane Kiffin, look, I'm not saying Lane Kiffin would be a candidate because he's had the job. It didn't work. They're not going to hire him again. But older Lane Kiffin has become a coach who has an offensive scheme that works. He's also the kind of guy who can come be a splash recruiter. And ideally,
did you like
you
that
want
he
both.
Offered Devin Brown immediately after the firing?
Well, of course. I mean, he doesn't play. So, but okay. You want someone with a coherent offensive and defensive scheme or you know, an idea of the X's and O's. Because here's the thing. The guys who do both are the ones who win national championships, and you need someone who does both. What's more important of the two? Recruiting. Recruiting is more important. You need someone who can beat Nick Saban, Kirby Smart, Dabo Swinney, and Ryan Day for recruits. Because you're not... Like, I think people are looking at this like, oh, you need to be able to beat Mario Cristobal for players. No. You need to be able to keep Bryce Young from going to Alabama. Bryce Young played quarterback at Mater Dei. Good quarterbacks at Mater Dei play at USC. They don't go to Alabama. And Bryce Young was committed to USC and then flipped to Alabama. And it's working out really well for him. But you also need to get those other players in Southern California who are leaving to go to Clemson, who are leaving to go to Ohio State, who are leaving to go to LSU, who are leaving to go to Georgia.
Let me throw you this.
Them to stay.
Is college football just different now? Where yes. You have to live with that. Where it's like no matter
Carroll,
who you
Pete Carroll at USC helped start that. Well, you know, Pete Carroll's going to frostproof Florida and getting Nickell Robey.
Like, cuz that's the thing about it. You might lose a five-star quarterback for Mater Dei, but then you might go take a four or five-star prospect out of Florida. I think that's how you mitigate it. So, like, USC's 2021 class was actually really good. They finished number 7 overall nationally, and they had, a handful of top 150 players, I think 5, if I'm remembering correctly, and Corey Foreman, who's the number 1 player in the country before Quinn Ewers reclassified. They also got 3 different players at positions that ranked number 1 overall in California. And I feel like that's the type of class that certainly could win the Pac-12. So
yes.
I know that's not the point that you're making. The point is a coach that you want to win
be
a
able
national
to
championship.
Too, but could James Franklin develop that talent? Yes, he could. Could Luke Fickell develop that talent? Yes, he could. Could Dan Mullen develop that talent? Yes, he could.
I also think that Clay Helton wasn't a dynamic personality. Never met him, but I've heard personally that he's like the nicest, most genuine human being on the planet. But I also feel like any other coach in that position would have been able to have the same results. And that's why USC is one of the most attractive jobs in college football, because you don't have to be a mega recruiter or the best recruiter ever to sign a top 10 class at USC.
Forget that Lane and Sark flopped there. So if you're thinking it's easy, just remember, Only one person has had great success there in the past 40 years.
That's right. That's right.
You're describing the job the same way you describe the Texas job, and it's the same mistake you made.
Well, they're the same program. The
Texas job. Yeah, basically, yes.
Yeah. They're both black holes for some reason. And I don't understand why, you know, especially I think USC's is even worse because the middle of the road Pac-12 teams probably aren't as good as the middle of the road Big 12 teams. Maybe that'll fire people up a little bit, but I think that's a fact. So like USC has one or two tough games every year. And with the talent they have in their roster, they should be blowing through everybody else. Like losing games like the way they did to Stanford, not just losing, but getting your butts kicked is the reason why their coach isn't there anymore. But, you know, to me, it's like, I don't know if any of these candidates that have been floated around for USC are really that amazing. Like the days of Jim Harbaugh or, you know, Scott Frost or Urban Meyer falling out of the sky, just it's not there right now. I'm not saying that those all worked.
Okay, only one of those feeling, guys ultimately worked out at the place they went.
But there's no slam dunk who's going to come out of the woodwork, take over the USC job. And it's like, I would have questions about Luke Fickell there. I would have questions about James Franklin there. These aren't no doubt about it candidates. And it's like for a job that in our poll that we did, top five jobs in America, by talking to 100 college football staffers across the country, USC was a very desirable job. And it's just like, I don't know where was USC? Where did it finish? It was number six, right? Yeah, six.
Right.
So if it's the sixth best job in college football, I don't know if James Franklin really gets my blood going. You know,
doesn't James Franklin have like the eighth best job in college football already? So
he does. Penn State is, I think it received votes, but it wasn't in the top 12 of the poll. But still, great job, top 15 job in America. But I also think James Franklin might rather live in LA and might rather start his clock over.
I think he starts his clock over, exactly. You get away from Ohio State. You have to deal with Oregon, but I would argue that Ohio State has been more consistent and more dominant for longer, so Oregon does not feel as scary. And you have the geographical advantage over Oregon, whereas at Penn State, you don't necessarily have a geographical advantage over Ohio State. You guys you're kind of even with them geographically in terms of recruiting. So I do think that would be attractive. I think James Franklin would play well in LA. I think the way he recruits, the way he talks, the way he coaches, the kind of players he's looking for, I think that would fit very well at USC. So that's it. And that's why his name keeps coming up.
He also wouldn't have to play Oregon every year either.
He'd come up.
Like he could play in a conference championship game at USC without ever having to play Oregon.
Correct. And if you're winning the South every year, I think they're pretty happy because you're gonna win the league championship every once in a while if you're doing that. So yeah, I think that's why that name keeps coming up. Matt Campbell, obviously somebody you should consider, but you know, from what I've heard, Matt Campbell does not want to go. You know, if he does go somewhere, he doesn't want to go to the SEC because he doesn't want that style of recruiting. I would say he wouldn't like it at USC if that's his feeling, because you have to recruit like a good SEC coach at USC to get them what they want.
Well, especially because the SEC is in LA. It's like, correct. I don't know how much the SEC is recruiting the same areas that Iowa State. Iowa State recruits the Midwest. They're a Big 12 team, but I think mostly speaking are either in Texas or in the Midwest. And it's like Texas obviously is very highly populated by SEC programs, but it's like not so much in Ohio or Indiana or the other Midwest, Iowa, Nebraska, those types of areas. And of course, if there's a top 100 player, doesn't matter if they're on Mars, the SEC is going to show up. But the entire thing of like, if Corey Foreman is in next year's class, whoever takes the job has to be able to keep Corey Foreman away from Clemson, Alabama, and Ohio State. Like, it's like, right. Even if you're not in that conference, you still have to win those battles for sure.
Yeah. And that's why Cristobal's name comes up for the same reason, because we know he can recruit like that. But if I'm Mario Cristobal, I stay at Oregon because I'm already two or three years ahead of USC. And even if they hire somebody good, you're still going to get yours. You're still going to win a lot. And then if you're waiting for something perfect closer to where you're from, which is Florida, then maybe you wait. You know, and maybe it's, you know, Alabama opens when Nick Saban retires, or Dan Mullen goes to the NFL and Florida opens, or maybe you want to go back home to Miami sometime. I don't know if Miami's definitely not a better job than Oregon right now, but you just never know. If I'm Mario Cristobal, I stay at Oregon until the perfect situation comes along, because he's already got it rolling.
I think that if you're Mario Cristobal, you've already proven that you can recruit at a high level. I think that, you know, you would make, I know they just beat Ohio State very convincingly, but overall his resume, it doesn't indicate elite level coach. I think it indicates elite level recruiter. Now, obviously being an elite level recruiter helps you get the second notch, and he might be on his way this year, but he strikes me as somebody who could exist in that realm, whether it be in Florida or in California, but he's already going into California and taking top tier talents away from SC.
And if SC gets a bunch of players, it's still not going to keep Oregon from getting players. There's enough to go around between those two. So I don't think he needs to worry about that much. And if he wants to stay at Oregon forever, stay at Oregon forever. Cause he's got a situation now where if he can build a roster that can go to Columbus and beat Ohio State, you can win anywhere. You don't need to do anything.
And
you
here's don't need the scariest part about Oregon. Their roster is not complete yet. The class they signed last year
wasn't on the field.
Did it
without his two best players.
And their two best players weren't on the field. And Ohio State was completely, in my opinion, got their butts kicked despite having a distinct talent advantage. I'm very much looking forward to seeing what Oregon looks like in 2 or 3 years when they're at full speed. You know?
Yeah.
And it's like, you're right. You're already, but it's also personal life too. It's like on the topic of the top five jobs in America, which we did this week, there is a difference between what are the top five jobs in America and what would be your top five jobs in America, right? So like to me, if I were creating a list of jobs for my personal employment and I were the coach, USC
Texas,
would probably be my number
one. Coordinator at Texas, defensive coordinator at Texas. That would be your list, right?
It'd be USC head coach, then every position coach at Texas. No, but seriously, my number one job, if I were the head coach and I got to pick, would absolutely be the head coach at USC. It's in a fertile recruiting territory. It's in a winnable conference. Your biggest rivalry in the conference, no respect, no disrespect to UCLA, but in terms of on the field accomplishments, is Oregon, which is a manageable rivalry right now. Like, I don't know. And you get to live by the Pacific Ocean, which is a great thing, because if I ever get rich one day, and hopefully I do, the first thing I'm going to do with that wealth is buy a house in Southern California by the ocean.
You're going to be Bruce Feldman's neighbor?
I would do anything to be Bruce Feldman's neighbor. I was walking around with him there, and Mr. Manhattan Beach. So, I'm more of an Orange County guy, but like USC to me seems to have all the tools. So that would be my personal number one.
Yeah, I can see you. I can see you living on Newport Beach.
Tarp off, everything. Yeah.
We'll be right back after these words. Well, let's talk about some other folks. Fickle's an interesting one, because Mike Bone, the AD at USC, hired Luke Fickle at Cincinnati. I don't think Fickle leaves for that, only because he seems to, be firmly rooted until the perfect situation, and by that I mean Ohio State or Notre Dame, comes along. He's got six kids. You try to uproot six kids. And then the other piece of that is he's been Ohio State's head coach. And I think people forget how much that changes the dynamics for him. He's already had one of these jobs. It didn't go well, and he was thrown into a horrible situation. You can't blame him for that year. But I talked to him about this last year. It affected him so much that he didn't even know if he ever wanted to be a head coach at that point. He was just perfectly fine coaching his position. And it took, I believe it was a conversation with Mark D'Antonio, who said, look, you could be really good at this. You got to try. And, I think for him, if he's got things in a place where he feels good and he likes his team and he likes where he is, you're going to have to dynamite him out of there. And even USC might not be enough dynamite.
I was there when he was the interim head coach on the beat.
Yep.
So I saw it all happen. It was an impossible situation. And the thing that people forget about it was Ohio State also lost their like six best players.
Yes. Including
so it wasn't just like Jim Tressel just resigned. Tatgate was happening. It's like he got thrown into a position where they were just in a really bad spot. And it was one of the only losing seasons they've had. I think it's one of two losing seasons they've had since 2000. So that might only be the only one, if I'm not mistaken. So, like, I get that that would be something that would cause apprehension. Now, here's the thing I will say about Luke Fickell. There's two things that I would be afraid of. One, the transition from AAC to Power 5 hasn't gone very well with the last few who have done.
Okay, but you're saying as a recruiter, was Luke Fickell not an excellent recruiter at Ohio State?
Well, let me get to the next part then.
Okay.
Luke Fickell's strength, and it was at Ohio State, and I don't know if people listening to this podcast know who Darren Lee is or remember. Darren Lee was a first-round linebacker off of Ohio State's national championship team. He was a three-star quarterback in high school. What Luke Fickell did while he was Ohio State's defensive coordinator was go into Ohio, into the under-recruited areas, and do everything that he could to find the undervalued guys who weren't getting scholarship offers, and he would go into Urban Meyer's office and convince them to take these kids. And these kids would turn out to be first-round draft picks. And nobody knows the state of Ohio better than Luke Fickell does, having spent the majority of his entire life in Columbus, both in high school as a football player and then as a longtime coach, but then also now recruiting from the Cincinnati area. The guy knows the state very well. He's in the comfort zone. He's in a conference that promotes that type of roster. And it's like, just because you're a super good recruiter in Ohio that has the phone number of every single coach and assistant coach in the high school ranks in your entire state, then plucking that person out of Cincinnati and in out of their comfort zone and then dropping them into LA is a little bit different. So it's just like the AAC promotes success if you know your surrounding areas and are a very good recruiter and can have success within that strategy. And then on top of that, he's also doing it in a state that he's known his entire life and can recruit the heck out of. So it's like that would be I'm not saying he wouldn't be successful, but it would be a major transition. And it kind of reminds me of Sonny Dykes. Sonny Dykes
going to Cal
couldn't – he's a great coach. No idea how to recruit Northern California. He'll tell you that to this day. Comes back to SMU, and now they're knocking off top 100 players in the Dallas area. And it's like sometimes territory and comfort in that territory is all that it takes in order to recruit at a high level. And it just would be a very big challenge, and I don't know if it's a 100% lock that he would go kill it out there. And I think he knows that too.
Let me throw another sitting head coach at you who has been very good but has bumped up against – some really good coaches in his league, and maybe he wants to get away from them. Dan Mullen. What would you think of Dan Mullen at USC?
What do you think of Dan Mullen as a recruiter?
That's the question, because I think you can look at this and say, well, he doesn't have to coach against Saban, or he doesn't have Kirby Smart in his division. He doesn't have Saban in the other division anymore. He doesn't have to play LSU every year. That smooths the path because he can beat everybody else. So that smooths the path. But this is where the hangup comes, because I think he checks every box except the can you beat Nick Saban, Kirby Smart, Dabo Sweeney on the recruiting trail, which you also have to do at USC. It's the impediment to the national title, whether at USC or at Florida.
What does USC want? Does USC want and feel like it should be winning a national championship, or does it just want to win the Pac-12?
National championships. They feel like they should compete for a national championship.
So, and that's my hang up with James Franklin. It's like James Franklin is a super good coach and has done well at Vanderbilt and has done pretty well at Penn State, but he gets his butt kicked in head-to-head matchups for the most part with Ohio State, whether that be with Ohio prospects or mostly Pennsylvania prospects. And he...
But what if he's at the school in LA recruiting against Oregon instead of at the school in Pennsylvania recruiting against Ohio State?
Possibly better, right? I think that the thing about it is that USC is already signing, for the most part, except for the horrid 2020 cycle, top 10 classes with Clay Helton. So the question to you is, how much better do you envision USC would recruit if James Franklin were the head coach? Do you think it would go from top 7 to top 3? Because I don't. I think they would just be very, very good. You think he would start taking spots from Ohio State, Bama, or Georgia?
Yeah. Because I think he could get some of those West Coast players that are leaving to stay home. And that would bump it up. That would bump USC up.
The difference between the number 3 rated class and the number 7 rated class is probably the difference of like 6 top 150 or 125 players. I don't know if you were going to have a 24 player surplus of top talent like that in a 4-year period because James Franklin arrives in L.A. I mean, I'm not saying you're wrong, but like, it's just like
versus Clay Helton,
because it's like also too. James Franklin has been completely criticized for in-game play calling. It's like in development. So I don't know if you just like go hire James Franklin and win a national championship. It's like you still, if you're USC, have to beat Georgia, Ohio State, and Clemson. So just because, I
think he's got a better chance than any of these other people we've talked about, other than Cristobal.
That might be the case.
Who I don't think would take the job.
Unless you go after somebody that hasn't failed yet, or somebody who hasn't, I'm not saying James Franklin failed, but
let me throw this at you. The last person who succeeded at USC came from the NFL. He actually was the fourth choice, and he'd failed in the NFL. I'm going to give you the names of some guys who have not failed in the NFL, but we don't know if they'd want the job. Eric Bieniemy is one, the offensive coordinator of the Chiefs.
Yeah.
So Eric Bieniemy has been a college coach, and fairly recently. He was the offensive coordinator at Colorado in 2011 and 2012. He has coached at the college level. He is recruited. He understands that. He's not been an NFL lifer. And he's also the guy who has called plays does Andy Reid call the plays?
I think Andy Reid is very much involved in it, but I think Bieniemy calls them.
Bieniemy actually calls the plays. So he's calling the plays for Patrick Mahomes. That means something to recruits. That will resonate. He's got a Super Bowl ring. So that's one to think about. Another one, how about Joe Brady? I think we've kind of figured out that Joe Brady was a large ingredient in the secret sauce that made the 2019 LSU team so good. Now, I don't know if Joe Brady has any desire, because he has been an NFL lifer with the exception of that one team, and maybe he doesn't like recruiting, and maybe he just wants to be an NFL head coach. But don't you at least kick the tires?
Yeah, I think that Joe Brady is probably one of the more attractive candidates that you could come up with, and it's just like, how much do you think was Brady, and how much do you think of it was Burrow? It's like the entire LSU existence from that national championship team seems like everything that could possibly go right
went right. It's going to have to be broken down to its component parts before we figure out exactly who did what.
Yeah.
Let me throw one more at you from the NFL. This is a guy, he very briefly was in college at the beginning of the last decade, and I thought he was fantastic, and I thought he was a great recruiter. I have no idea if he wants to recruit. He's been an NFL head coach. He's taken a team to the Super Bowl, blown a really big lead in the Super Bowl, and then gotten fired as an NFL head coach. Dan Quinn. I think Dan Quinn would be a phenomenal recruiter as a college head coach, like Pete Carroll level recruiter. He connects with everybody. If you've ever met the man, you will, regardless of your background, anything, you will connect with him. You will like him. And that's the kind of person that recruits really well, especially at a place like USC.
And what is he now? Is he the defensive coordinator at the Cowboys now?
At the Cowboys, yes. I have no idea if that's something he'd want, or if he just wants to call defenses in the NFL and maybe try to get another NFL head coaching job. But if I'm not just talking about USC, but if a school wanted to take a chance, that's a guy I would interview just to see. Do you want to recruit? Because if you do, you'd be really good at it.
What was Pete Carroll's brilliance? Was he, because like, here's the thing. In LA now, LeBron exists. The Dodgers are awesome.
The Rams are awesome. The Rams are there again. 2 years ago, and they're awesome.
And now there's the Chargers are there. And it's just like, can USC ever be the cool thing in town again?
It's like, what was Pete Carroll's awesomeness? And
he came at a relatively low point for LA sports. The Lakers were good and not many other teams were.
So, but like, was his genius recruiting? Was his genius making LA think USC was cool and having
It was two pronged. It was recruiting and it was making them cool. He was a good recruiter, good evaluator, but he made them the coolest team in town. A part of the way he made them the coolest team in town was creating this like ferocious cutthroat competition at practice every day, which is what Nick Saban does, which is what Dabo Sweeney does. But Pete Carroll opened it to the whole world. Everybody could just come by and watch and see how awesome. It was a show every day.
I was in college, and I don't know if it was just because I was a kid, but I was covering the Pac-12 as much as a college newspaper reporter could at Arizona during the Pete Carroll years. And the Pete, when things were humming at USC, and we talk about the cool kids table now, you know?
Yeah. No, they were the only cool kids.
Cooler than that.
Yeah.
Like, it was like their uniforms were badass. They were in L.A. You know, every celebrity that you could think of was on the sidelines.
And they were rock stars.
And they were so cool that it – and this is something that I would love to explore one day, maybe in a story. And then you tell me if you think I'm nuts, okay? In college football, there is this overlying veil of paranoia. Have you noticed that?
Yes.
Coaches are paranoid. Recruiting coordinators are paranoid. People are afraid that people are spying on them, and they're afraid to say something, and they're afraid to talk to the media. And
Pete Carroll did not care. Come watch my practice, and we'll still beat your ass.
Yeah. It was. Yeah, there was nothing cooler than that. You know what I mean? Anybody could. And it's like I could. I recall when I was in LA, I went to one of their practices once when I was 18 or 19 or however old I was. And I was just like, this is the coolest thing in the world.
You can see the Hollywood sign from the practice field if it's not smoggy that day.
Also, if you have badasses like Reggie Bush on your team, watching practice is awesome. So, like, I don't know where this paranoia came from. And I don't know why. I mean, like, I know there's been, the Wake Forest scenario. But how many proven cases of college football recruiting espionage has there been? And why are people so uptight at the college level? Because I think a lot of them are.
Because they always have been. This is not where it came. Pete Carroll was the anomaly then. They were always paranoid.
It's like sometimes I feel like when you are a college football reporter that you're covering Fort Knox or something. It's college football.
It is. I was at an NFL training camp practice and an AD happened to call me about something else. And I said, I'm sitting here watching a practice and there's like 2,000 fans here watching practice. You know, you could do that and sell some season tickets at that practice and it'd be good for business for you. You do know you're in the entertainment business, right? And it was like, well, my coach, you know, who cares? Your coach works for you.
You know, especially now too, in the world of NIL, it's like when you want your practices to be open, you want your players to be visible. And it's like,
well, especially early on, now you can close things down as you get closer, or maybe you don't open them up when you're installing game plan type stuff on Tuesday and Wednesday. But people are not going to be YouTubing your practice or Snapchatting your practice in any way that can cause any sort of problem. Knows what you run. They see it in your game film.
You've been to how many practices in the last 5 years?
Lots.
When I would go to the Ohio State practices when I was on the beat, they'd let you in for the first 30 minutes of like stretching zones and they'd put tackling dummies in your way. And if the quarterback were in a competition, they'd be on the other side of the field. And when they start running team drills, everybody had to leave. And it was just like, why are we even allowed in then? You know, it's just like if we watched every single practice, nothing that we wrote or saw would prevent Ohio State from winning or losing a football game. It's just like insane to me.
If they're running a trick play on Wednesday or Thursday that they've never run before, that they're going to put in the game plan, then that's a situation where you wouldn't want people to see that. And I understand that. But in almost any other situation, like we've seen you run outside zone. There's nothing you do when you run outside zone that's any more special than anybody else. So you're not hiding anything. All you're doing is hurting yourself by not creating an atmosphere where it's more fun. Well, and Pete Carroll even said he wanted an audience there because it put pressure on his players to perform every second of practice.
And didn't he just kind of look California cool?
It all looked very cool. It did. I mean, the Will Ferrell practical joke with the dummy thrown off the roof. I mean, come on.
He as a person is California cool. So, like, I don't
know. He actually is from California. He's a NorCal guy. He's a Northern California guy, but he's from California. So maybe that's it. I don't know.
Can you duplicate what he did? Do you think somebody can duplicate it? I don't think
so, because they tried with his former assistants, two of them, and neither one of them could do it. I will tell you which former assistant probably came the closest. Interim coach Ed Orgeron. But they didn't hire
him. Ed Orgeron would be awesome there.
Yeah, you know, I don't think he's leaving LSU, thing, like, no, I know. At least not voluntarily.
Yeah, no, I know. But like, who doesn't love that guy?
Well, there's some LSU fans who don't at the moment. They would like to see him.
I know.
They would like to see him play a little different than they played against UCLA. All right, we got to get to some games. We got big games this week. We got a lot to talk about. We got some point spreads that look very interesting to me. Let's start off. You know, we talked to Joe Tessitore the other day. He is broadcasting the Michigan State-Miami game, which is a noon Eastern game on Saturday. Miami is a 6-point favorite in this game. The Michigan State money line is +195. I'm not sure I might not jump all over that.
Michigan State looks pretty good this year, don't they?
They do. They do. Now you can take the free 6 points or just go for just say they're going to win outright, because I remember I mentioned this over the summer. I thought Michigan State could be better. I did not think they'd look as smooth as they have the first couple of weeks. I thought that it'd be kind of fits and starts, and there'd be games where they look good and games where they didn't. And maybe this is one where they don't. But nothing I've seen from Miami against Alabama or Appalachian State tells me that they're going to blow out Michigan State. If they win, it's going to be close. So
the funniest thing about this too, Andy,
I might take them 6 points.
When Michigan State was awesome, it didn't. It was hard to watch. Like it's always just been Michigan State football, right? Like I don't
think it was that hard to watch. I liked watching, like, the 2013 team. I really enjoyed watching that team. I liked the way that team played defense. It was fun to watch on defense. They were ferocious, and the thing is, they played a pro style offense, but they would take shots down the field pretty regularly. So I thought it was fun to watch. I'm interested to see what Mel Tucker does with this, though, because I think he's flipped the roster pretty well. Except he didn't wind up starting the quarterback out of the portal. He wound up starting Peyton Thorne, and Thorne has looked very good the first couple weeks. So these guys just may be a year ahead of schedule. And if that's the case, the rest of the Big Ten East, watch out.
Yeah, that running back, Kenneth Walker, I mean, he's got some moves, man. It's like college football gambling is really, really tough, because if you look on the surface of this game, you see two games where Michigan State was in complete control. They look way ahead of schedule. And on the flip side, Miami looked overwhelmed, reasonably so, against Alabama, and then almost lost to App State. And you might think, like, okay, Michigan State looks awesome. It's like, what about both of these teams? And you said it yourself, would make you think that Miami could do it, and then Miami could go out and win.
That Miami has 17. A potentially more talented roster is what you.
But like,
and that's why.
But I would lean Michigan State here.
I would too. I think the way they're playing, and we don't have a big sample size for Mel Tucker yet, but seems to be able to get his guys up for bigger games, whether he was at Colorado or at Michigan State so far. And this is a showcase for them. You know, this is one of the bigger, I'm trying to think, is there a bigger game at noon than this one?
No, I think that's the biggest game. This
seems like Nebraska, Oklahoma, which doesn't seem like it's going to be competitive.
Do you want to talk about that one? Because I think it's interesting. Let's do
it. This is the game Nebraska tried to get out of, because Scott Frost didn't want to get punked by Oklahoma on Fox Big Noon Saturday. But here they are. They're playing because Brett McMurphy caught wind that they were trying to get out of it. And now They were shamed back into playing the game. They were going to play, I believe, Old Dominion was one of the candidates. I can't remember who the other ones were. But that was going to be the replacement for this. And this is just, it's a 22.5-point spread. Oklahoma against Tulane was way closer than it should have been. Obviously, Oklahoma last week looked very good, but that, you know, that doesn't tell you much. What do you think of this? You think 22.5? You think Oklahoma
covers?
Close
your eyes before you see the number, and what do you think the spread is?
I would have said the spread was 30.
Right. I'm with you on that. This game has 63-14 written all over it, doesn't it?
Well, especially watching Illinois get destroyed by Virginia last week. Like, Nebraska lost to Illinois in kind of a tooth and nail game. Virginia's okay. They destroyed Illinois. Like, a reasonably competent team probably will beat Nebraska pretty easily.
Yeah, it's also two weeks removed. Here, I'm not saying anything that isn't, that does, it seems like rocket science, but I have a very, very hard time analyzing teams when they play really bad teams or lower level teams. So which one is Oklahoma? Is Oklahoma the team that struggled mightily in week one against an overmatched team, or the team that had a running clock in the fourth quarter against an overmatched team? You know, and yeah, it's just like, maybe sometimes you just need that clunker to get out of your system. Yeah. In the first week of friend, the,
yeah. Our friends at the Solid Verbal, what's their motto is win your clunkers.
Win your clunkers. So it's like if Oklahoma's coming into this game and feeling like mid season form, confident, coming off a running clock game, Spencer Rattler is putting up some numbers. Kennedy Brooks is one of the best runners in college football. Their defense is supposedly a lot better. It's like, what? I've seen a lot of really talented teams play Nebraska in the past, and it's always been quite the bloodbath. And it's like, even 45-17 to cover, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so
like, I'm not great at math, but yes.
Yeah, I'm not great at math either. That's why we were in journalism. But I just don't, like, what would the score have to be for Nebraska to cover this? Do people think they're going to score 30? I don't. And if they only score 24, yeah, do people think they're going
to
keep
40 to 20? 40 to 20 is a Nebraska cover, but I just don't see that.
Yeah, it's like, I guess if Nebraska held Oklahoma to 40, you would take it, right? If you're Nebraska?
Yeah. Well, 40 to 20 is like a scoreigami score. 42 to 20 is a realistic score. 42 to 20 is a Nebraska cover. But, I mean, that's really probably Lincoln Riley calling off the dogs at some point.
Do we think that Nebraska is going to score on this defense?
Yes.
Okay.
But not a lot, but yes.
Yeah. I'm not saying zero, but, like, is this going to be one of those games where it's Oklahoma 45, Nebraska 28 in the third quarter?
I don't think so. I don't. Yeah, I just Nebraska's offense has not looked competent against.
Oh, guess what the over under is?
Oh no, what is it?
Did you look?
I didn't look.
Just guess.
68.
It's 62, and that strikes me as an over that Oklahoma would hit on its own.
Wow. Yeah. Well, listen.
I think I'm going to take
Oklahoma. All right. Let me ask you this, though. If you're Oklahoma and you're obviously aware that Nebraska tried to get out of this game, do you try to punish them for that?
Yes. I think you just try to punish them anyway. Like, I don't know. Like, I'm in the college football world where you do what you got to do and you feel good about yourself, gain some momentum, and, you know, especially if I found out the opponent was trying to leave the game, I don't know, I'd either feel bad or, lay it on them. I don't know.
We'll be right back after this message from one of our lovely sponsors. Are you ready for a What Does Vegas Know line?
Sure.
Okay. If North Carolina had beaten Virginia Tech week one, I would be totally on board with this line. But it is West Virginia minus 2.5. And I love Neil Brown. We know that. My affection for Neil Brown teams is well known on this podcast. So I've been saying all along, if Justin Fuente can't produce a consistent team, West Virginia will eat Virginia Tech's lunch. But I thought Virginia Tech looked really good against North Carolina.
The thing that was most impressive about Virginia Tech against North Carolina was how they controlled the offense and defensive lines. Correct. And it's like, if that to me is the most transferable thing you can take from any football game, if your team was winning in the and if you're with that, and if that is something that you're noticing, then I think to myself, Virginia Tech has an absolutely awesome chance to win that game. And I would lean towards Virginia Tech, but it also seems fishy, so I'm not going to play it.
Yeah, it's a tough environment. At West Virginia is not an easy place to play, but you're right. It's an odd line. It just kind of sticks out. Like I said, had North Carolina beaten Virginia Tech by like 7, then this would seem perfectly reasonable to me. But the way Virginia Tech controlled that game against North Carolina, I have a hard time going with that. I would have thought they'd have been favored. I'd have thought at least the line had been flipped.
Yeah. That is a stinky, stinky line.
All right. Here's one that I also feels like a, what does Vegas know? Although it's a road team giving points. So maybe that's why. Cincinnati at Indiana. Cincinnati's a 4-point favorite. I think Cincinnati beats Indiana by more than 4.
I think they beat them
by a touchdown
you?
Or more. What's that?
I'm going to take it one step further for you. I think they're going to beat Notre Dame too.
I think that may be true. Purdue might beat Notre Dame this week.
That one is trappy. Everyone's going to bet Notre Dame -7 against. I'm going to bet Purdue in that game. I'm just going to bet it blindly because everybody's on Notre Dame and that line's not moving at all.
Yeah. Indiana, I think is still a good team. And if Indiana comes out of this deal 1-2, having lost to Iowa and Cincinnati, there's no shame in that. That doesn't mean Indiana's a bad team. It means you had the bad luck of playing probably two teams that may end the season in the top 10. And
do we believe that Cincinnati's a top 10 team?
Maybe.
Legitimately,
they were last year. 10
team?
They got basically everybody back.
Then I think that Indiana is closer to a 6-7 win team. And I believe that Cincinnati is probably one of the top at least 15 teams in college football. I think this line makes a ton of sense. You know, Indiana's got some magic. Don't ever, you know, downplay the importance of everybody love everybody that Tom Allen has instilled there. And, you know, I wouldn't be shocked to see Indiana win this game, but I am 100% on Cincinnati in this one.
All right, let's talk about the game I'm going to be at on Saturday, and that is Alabama at Florida. Anthony Richardson is the most intriguing story coming out of Florida all season and probably in several seasons, but he pulls up with a hamstring injury at the end of an 80-yard touchdown run against USF. No telling what his availability is for this game. I feel like if he's the guy who averages 38.3 yards per play every time he takes a snap, which is what his average is at the moment, obviously that wouldn't continue against Alabama, but I think if he's that special against good teams, then he raises Florida's level and maybe closes a gap with a program like Alabama or Georgia. But if he's unavailable, if he's hindered in any way, if he's not as fast as he should be, then I don't think that changes much. I think the gap then is the gap. This is a 14.5 point spread. Alabama by 14.5 on the road in what is going to be a pretty tough environment. I almost want to take Florida to cover just because the environment may make Alabama's offense a little tough to run and maybe they don't just completely destroy Florida. But with Alabama, you just never know because once they click, it almost doesn't matter who they're playing.
They're the Golden State Warriors when everybody was healthy. It's like you can either bet on Alabama or you stay away because betting against them is just not fun. You would know more about this than I would. Florida last year, as we all know, played Alabama as well, or if not better than
everybody else. Yeah.
Does anything from what you saw in the SEC championship game last year travel to the home field
here? No, because Kyle Pitts is gone. Kyle Trask is gone. Kadarius. You're talking about two first rounders.
Yeah.
A second round quarterback. Like that's a completely different group. The defense was not particularly great last year. I don't know if it's much better this year. We'll see about that.
This like kind of strikes me as a respect line that the helmets are typically hard fought SEC games, but to me, Alabama is much, much better, right? Unless we find out too that maybe Alabama's flawed. You know, everybody this year.
And that's the thing. We just don't know that yet. I mean, if Miami had gone and blown Appalachian State's doors off, then we'd go, okay, yeah, Alabama's just awesome. But now we're like, did Alabama mess them up? Or was it just that Miami wasn't that good? Or now that these are the things you need more data points for. And we're going to get a significant data point this week, but I don't think we have enough information for that. I probably would have been a lot more excited for this game had Anthony Richardson been healthy, just to see what Dan Mullen did. You know, what would his decision be? Would it be start Emory Jones and then put in Anthony Richardson? And if it was still rolling with him, then you just keep him in and he becomes the guy. Because I think that's eventually what happens if he keeps playing like that. But now, if he's at all limited, you don't risk him in a game you might not have won anyway, unless you have a chance to win it, a real chance, because you might be able to use him the rest of the season to create a special season. So I don't know. It's a very confusing situation. Let's move on to probably what will be the best atmosphere of the week. This is Auburn going to Penn State, whiteout game, going to be so much fun. Those Auburn fans, I talked to a few this week. They're so pumped to go. I sent them to the Creamery. They're going to love the campus. It's a beautiful campus, and it's a great atmosphere and a whiteout. Penn State is a 5-point favorite. Penn State already has a win against a very good team on the road at Wisconsin, and we know absolutely nothing about Auburn. Nothing.
Have you ever seen, obviously you probably have seen that, the meme of the Spider-Man pointing at the Spider-Man?
But of course.
That's Auburn and Penn State. Tell me how they're different.
But I can't tell you because I don't know what Auburn is yet.
They're Penn State.
Offensively? Defensively?
They're the same program is what I'm saying. I don't know about the specific personnel.
Stuck in the same place in their division behind the juggernaut.
Yes. But also capable of doing it and has inexplicably done it. Penn State has beaten Ohio State and won the Big Ten. Has like a very passionate
with Auburn.
Yeah, I mean, they're both. I just feel like they're both very similar in stature, and like it's just you put them in a position when they're playing each other, and it's like I cannot wait to see what it's like. Also, I'm very curious too if there are SEC fans who are going up to Penn State for this game, as I'm sure there will be.
Oh yeah.
What they will think of the best Big Ten atmosphere. Because
they'll love it. They'll love it. Now they'll say it's, and this is, I've already pissed off Penn State fans by saying this, but this is the truth. I've been to all of these things. A whiteout atmosphere is fantastic. It is a normal good game at Jordan-Hare. It is a normal good game at the Swamp, a normal good game at Tiger Stadium.
You think the whiteout is a normal game in the SEC?
A normal good game. Yeah, normal good game, like an Auburn-Georgia or an Auburn-LSU.
Man, you got to put some respect. I mean, I have never been to an SEC home game.
How about the person who's been to a bunch of them and has also been to a whiteout?
I'm not saying you're wrong. Maybe I know the difference. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying, like, I've seen a lot of big-time college football games, and I just can't imagine that being
average. If you ever went to an Alabama at LSU game, your head would explode. You have no clue.
Yeah, I need to just go as a fan.
It's basically, and I'm not talking about the whiteout, which is a very special atmosphere and is super cool, but these other games are basically the difference between a regular Tostitos chip and the chip you're about to eat.
Don't remind me. I was actually happy for 5 seconds.
Well, no, it's time. It's time, baby. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, Ari's eating the chip. We are back. And it is time. Ari has been waiting for almost a year to pay off this bet. He's now eating Tums. He's crunching some Tums. He's got a tumbler of milk in the beautiful athletic tumbler. I like Yeti. That.
Okay, we got
repping
this.
The brand. All right.
Now I'm going to go gloves on this because I'm the idiot that will absolutely touch his eyes with the stuff, and I'm not going down that
Use
road tonight.
Use the gloves. Don't touch your eye with the glove.
Oh, you're all nurturing now. That's so nice of you. Now you're the good guy. Good cop. Okay.
I just want to say, I just want to say thank you again to Jamie Chadwell and the Coastal Carolina Chanticleers for beating Kansas by 27 last week. So I'm not doing this too. Your soul belongs to the Reaper, it says on the bottom of the coffin-shaped box. Some of you will be watching this on video. Some of you will just be listening. Okay. Oh, yeah. My.
All right, I'm going to put Ari's the glove on the other hand. I'm already sweating.
Okay. Ari is gloved up. He's ready. Contrary to what you saw on the internet, the gloves don't have six fingers. Okay. You're cutting it with scissors. Very smart. I like this. Okay. And now, can we see the chip? It is a chip. Is it broken?
It's broken, yeah. Oh. But, you know, I'll
I don't know if that's good or bad. All right. Do it. How's it smell? It
smells terrible. Okay. Ready?
Ari.
Give me a countdown or something. Give me a countdown.
All right, here we go. Ready? 5, 4, 3, 2, 8. It's just, it sounds like a chip. Just like a normal chip. He looks fine. Oh, he's starting to cough. He's okay so far. Uh-oh. This looks uncomfortable. Can he get it down?
Awful.
How hot is it?
Extremely hot.
Like, your mouth is on fire? Your mouth is melting?
Yeah, of course, my mouth's on fire, man. It is extremely hot.
This is like, is it like you put a cigarette lighter in your mouth or something?
I have the hiccups.
Oh, no. We have our first medical malady. Have you had any milk? You can have some milk, Ari. There's no shame in drinking the milk.
Man, I'm...
You okay? Ari's undressing now. He's got his hat off. His shirt may be next.
It's like brutal. It is the hottest thing I've ever eaten.
Is the milk cutting it at all? Mm-hmm. Is it doing anything for you?
Yeah, it's the under the tongue is the hardest part.
Ooh. Oh, this sounds awful. I'm so sorry that you bet poorly against Miami that one time.
It's hard for me to talk.
It's not great for a podcast, but that's okay. You've done it. Oh, no. Did you just put your gloved hand on your eye?
Yeah, no, I'm good.
That's why you were wearing the gloves. Okay. Ari's going to go to the shower and wash his eye out now. He's going to drink some more milk. He has paid off the bet. You're a better man than I, Ari Wasserman. I am so proud of you.
Yeah, no, this is truly awful. Like, I'm crying.
But we love you. Stop touching your eyes.
Don't ever do this.
Okay. Words of wisdom. Ari Wasserman, hit the showers.
All right, bye.
I am terrible. I am a horrible person for this. I feel bad. Although he did make fun of me a lot after that UCLA-LSU bet. So maybe I don't feel that bad. I'm probably going to call him, check on him. Maybe we'll give him a few minutes. I can't believe he touched his eye with the glove. This is... Well, folks, when you make a bet, there can be consequences if you lose. Ari Wasserman has learned that tonight. We'll talk to you after the games.